This is the Bald Scientist Podcast, where we talk about science, from the factual to the fictional, and sometimes a bit of both, with the good doctor, One R. Pagan.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 17 of the Bald Scientist Podcast. I am, of course, your intrepid host, One. Did you miss me? We haven't talked since February, and this is a special episode to reignite the podcast, as it were. My guest today is Kate Shaw, host and everything else of the Strange Animals Podcast. We talk about her recently published book, Beyond Bigfoot and Nessie, lesser-known mystery animals from around the world. And it's an awesome one. And we also talk about, of course, cryptozoology, ecology and conservation, and even some science fiction and cosplay. But before we go into that, a couple of disclaimers. I am rusty, and I mean really rusty. I am also kind of rambly. But as always, here it goes, with a lot of love. Enjoy. Well, hello, Kate. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you?
So far, so good. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm especially grateful because this will mark the return of my podcast after a long hiatus for a variety of reasons that we don't have to get into right now. So I'm very grateful. This is a long time in the making, and I'm so looking forward to nerd out with a like-minded person.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk to you.
Okay. So can you tell us about yourself, as much or as little as you would like to?
Well, my name's Kate Shaw, and I am the host and everything else of Strange Animals Podcast, which is a weekly podcast about living, extinct, and imaginary animals. And the great thing is, sometimes you don't know which category the animals should fit into.
It's a nice surprise. Yeah. Every episode is a nice surprise, yes.
Yeah, well, thank you. And my background is actually in elementary education. It's not in science, but it's always been an interest of mine, so I try and make things as scientific as possible, but also understandable for people who don't have a background in science.
And you do it very well in both instances. Let me tell you, we need people like you.
Thanks.
Badly.
Well, so, it's fun to research, I gotta say that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we are friends on Twitter, and I kind of follow your adventures at conventions and venues like that. Would you like to tell us about your other interests in that regard?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do go to a lot of conventions. I haven't last year, of course, in 2020, I did not for some reason. But this year, I'm cautiously back at some conventions. I'll be, I don't know when your episode is going to come out, but I'll be at Dragon Con in a few weeks in Atlanta. And I'll be on a couple of panels there talking about...
That's so cool.
Yeah, on the digital media track. I'm going to be on one about, how to run a Kickstarter, because I had the book Kickstarter, which was successful. And I'm going to be on another panel about how to raise money with your podcast or other thing like that without being a jerk about it. So apparently, suddenly I'm an expert on Kickstarters, even though I've done exactly one.
Well, I mean, what can I tell you?
Yeah. But it was a learning experience, that's for sure. I'm not sure if I'd want to do it again, but I did get the book out of it. So
And a good one, too. And a good one, too. I'm a big fan. I've told you many times, but I want to put it out there in the proverbial air.
Well,
on the
thank
air.
you.
So, and do you do cosplay and stuff like that too?
Yeah, I'm actually working on a Jedi robes right now. I don't know if they're going to get finished because I'm about to move right before DragonCon. So, yeah, but oh, it's going to be so much fun. I'm going to dress as just a general, not a specific character, but just a Jedi.
Of
'Cause
course, a Jedi, yeah.
who doesn't want to be a Jedi? So,
Absolutely.
yeah. So I've got the robes half finished, and of course the underrobes and stuff, the vest and boots and all that, I don't think I'll have time for, so I may not wear it this year. But next year I'm gonna look great.
Well, you're gonna do fine. And I wanted to ask you, did you see the latest Obi-Wan Kenobi series yet?
No, and that's I have not had time to watch it. I am
Oh,
so behind on my watching, and I've heard such good things about it.
it's so awesome. I will not give you any spoilers or anything, but it's very well done. It's emotional, it's funny, it's everything that we all, like to see.
I love Star Wars,
Yeah.
and I only just managed to watch all of The Mandalorian, and I
Oh, I
still
haven't
have,
seen
yeah.
that one, no.
Oh, it's so good. I enjoyed it. I mean, some of the episodes are better than others, but overall, I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next season. But there's a series about Boba Fett, and I think it's Boba
Okay.
Fett. Yeah, I haven't seen that either,
No,
so
I haven't either.
I'm way behind, but yeah, looking
Yeah,
forward to
I mean,
both of those.
these are, I almost said unprecedented times, but I hate that phrase already.
Yeah, we've heard it a
Yeah.
lot. It's sort of true, unless you go back to, the Black Plague and medieval
Yeah, I
times,
mean,
but
we are not that far, but yeah.
yeah.
On a happier note, excuse me. Talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi, it's a standing joke in my laboratory because I'm the Master Jedi, of course, and they are my
Oh yeah.
Padawans.
Oh, that's
And I
awesome.
am Obi Bald Kenobi.
That is great. See,
It is awesome.
I should make these Jedi robes for you.
Well, and
You'd
but
look
I do.
really good because you could just flip the hood up and then,
It, exactly.
yeah,
A
and your hair
everybody will
wouldn't get in
think.
the way.
Yeah, everybody will think, oh, there's a handsome man behind that, and then the surprise. No.
Nah, you are a handsome Jedi. You
Well,
have the
thank
beard
you.
for it.
No, but I do have a confession to make. I have taught as Darth Vader.
Oh
Yeah, one Halloween year,
no.
it fell on a class day, and I dressed as Darth Vader, and I went to the classroom, and I did the breathing like
Oh, that's so cool.
I took the microphone. I said, "I find your lack of knowledge in biology disturbing."
That's so great. Oh my gosh, I would have loved to have you as a
I'll
teacher
send you
back
a
in the day.
picture. I'll
I
send you
would
a
love to see that. Oh
It
man,
was funny.
none of my professors were that much fun.
Oh,
I
wow.
just had one English lit professor who would come in. He was in a band. He was so cool.
Oh,
And
that's
he would yeah.
next stage of cooling.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was just a little local band, but he would come in on early morning classes, and sometimes he would be very clearly hungover, and he'd say, "We're just gonna have a pop quiz, and then we're gonna go home."
Okay, well.
I loved him.
Okay.
Medieval lit is what he taught, but yeah.
So anyway, in my opinion, I mean, if you take yourself too seriously, nobody will. Okay, so that's but this is about you today, and I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things regarding your book. Why don't you tell us about your delightful book, Beyond Bigfoot and Nessie? Lesser known mystery animals from around the world.
Okay, well, there's so much to say about it that I'm like, where do I even start? The book is based on my podcast. Most of the content, not all of it, is taken from episodes about mystery animals that we've talked about on the different episodes over the last 5 years. And then I also did some new episode or new chapters that were never episodes and probably will never be.
I'm sorry for interrupting. You have more than about 300 episodes already, right?
Yeah. In fact, the 300th episode officially falls on Halloween this year. And I'm so excited. I have not decided the topic. I really need to get working on that. I want it to be something that's absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's such a great... If I had counted up when I started this episode or started this podcast and thought, are we going to hit a milestone episode on Halloween 1 year? I should just start in time for that. And it just worked out.
There we go. I'm looking forward to it. You got to make it spooky.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be spooky and fun and informative.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, that's okay. I am very easily gotten off traffic. Off topic.
Yeah, I'm a rambler as well. Yeah.
But anyway, so I decided I wanted to. I'd been thinking about making a book out of the episodes for a while. Then I wasn't sure how to approach it, and I didn't really have time. And at some point, I guess it was a little over a year ago, I thought, you know, if you don't do this now, you're just not going to do it. So I had set the deadline as our 5th year anniversary for the podcast, which was February of 2022. I managed to hit that just barely. So I ran a Kickstarter to self-publish the book because publishing is very slow. If you go through the regular channels and you get an agent and you get a publishing contract and your editor works with you and everything. And, you know, I would have liked to go through that, but I would still be trying to get an agent probably at this point. And it moves so, so slowly. And I thought, I want this out for the 5th anniversary, and I know how to do it myself. So I just decided to do that. And it was great that Kickstarter funded the first day. I didn't make a ton of money off of it, but I made enough money to cover all the expenses and got a really good artist to do the cover art and all this kind of stuff. It was a lot more work than I expected.
Which is beautiful. I know that our listeners are not seeing it, but with your permission, I'm going to post a picture of the cover.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, because it's a really nice cover. It has a bunch of animals. Very well done.
Yeah, I was very pleased with it. And the guy I got to make the cover didn't charge very much, which is great because the guy I got to do the formatting of the book charged me way too much and then sort of vanished after only doing part of it. But that's boring and in the past. Thank goodness. We got it done. But the book is all about, I like to use the term mystery animals instead of cryptids, because a lot of times cryptids imply things like, not necessarily animals that could be real, but things that are a little more speculative, like, you know, some people will talk about, say, Bigfoot, which does not appear in the book. It's even right there in the title, Beyond Bigfoot and Nessie. But some people talk about Bigfoot as being like a ghost or some sort of alien creature or something like that that's really beyond the realm of what I want to talk about in the podcast and in the book. So I just like the term mystery animal instead. And plus, that's really encompassing. And I consider cryptids and mystery animals as being things like, this frog has not been seen in 50 years. Could it still be alive?
Okay.
Or is it extinct? And things like, you know, well, the people in this area report seeing this sort of animal, but as far as we know, this animal doesn't exist. Could it be a real animal that, you know, scientists have just not found yet? And I know that does count as cryptids, but, you know.
You know that I have a name for that. Sometimes I call such animals credible cryptids.
Oh, I like that. I like that term a lot. Yeah.
Because, I mean, with no disrespect to anyone who may have seen something weird, because, I mean, these things do happen. When we're dealing about proving whether an animal is real or not, well, we need evidence. And for that, it's I like calling them credible cryptids. Yes.
Yeah, I like that. The tricky part is, where do you draw the line between credible and incredible? Because everybody's going to draw that line a little bit different.
But
I try to stay away from the really out there stuff. And if I do touch on it, it's usually going to be in October when we do the Monster Month. Yeah, but even then, you know, I try and, although I must say, I have a soft spot for ghost stories. I love ghost stories. I have no idea if I believe in ghosts or not. I've never seen anything, so, you know, but I know lots of other people do. So there's obviously something is going on, but whether they're ghosts, as in, you know, oh, the spirits of dead people or something like that, who even knows? It's something, but I do love a good ghost story.
So. Yeah, I agree. And personally, I have people very close to me who've had weird experiences, and they just share it with me. They don't want their names to be known. They have no reason to lie to me. As you said, something's going on.
And I have family members who've had really weird experiences, and also family members who've seen UFOs. So I don't know what UFOs are either, but it's kind of scary.
That's one of my guilty pleasures, I gotta admit. I'm very interested in that. They're not even UFOs anymore. They're UAPs now, apparently. So that's, but I digress as usual.
Yeah. Here we are talking about UFOs on the cryptids episode.
So going back to the topic at hand, was there a time like the proverbial light bulb appeared over your head? Like, I'm going to write the book about this and any specific time that you can identify?
Not really. I think originally I had thought that I would just choose like 5 or 6 topics that I'd covered in the episodes, but I would do a really deep dive and really, really try and get to the bottom of it and, you know, just make the book really dense and long and sort of scholarly. But I had to give that up because I literally don't have time for that. And while I do have lots of research experience, I'm not a scientist. So I'm going to leave that kind of stuff to scientists like you, because you have lots of time, right?
Sure.
You can just do that in your spare time. But at some point I thought, you know, I have... And I don't remember exactly when it was, but I think it was probably summer of 2021, like early summer, like maybe May. I thought, I don't have time to do this. I don't really have the research skills or the contacts, but I have a ton of content that I've produced for the podcast. And most of it, I mean, I brought it up to date whenever possible when I redid it for the book, especially the older episodes.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I was pretty happy with how it came out. So I didn't have to do a whole...
Undeservedly so, yeah.
Well, thanks. I didn't have to do a whole lot of rewriting. But it's so annoying because I'm so familiar with the different chapters now and the content. I actually... When I was trying to, you'd sent me a list of possible questions that we'd talk about today and topics. And I thought, well, I need to sort of flip through the book and kind of get some ideas for some of these things so that I don't, when you ask me something, I don't go, I have notes and everything. But when I flipped through the book, I thought, oh, these are all so boring because I've read them over so many times now.
But trust me, I mean, from my perspective, none of them are. You realize that you find them like that right now because you have seen so many times that it's kind of white noise to you. But if I may go back for a quick second and beg to differ in one of your assessments, you say that you're not a scientist, okay? But I beg to differ because you're doing and using every method that scientists use, okay? The objectivity, the research, the documentation, okay? You may not do experiments, okay? But in my view, in my humble opinion, you are, one of us, let me tell
Oh,
you.
thank you. Oh my gosh, that makes me feel really good.
No, and I mean it too. And I mean it too. And about your book, one thing that drew me to it very strongly is that I'm sure that you read the early works of Bernard Heuvelmans.
Oh yeah, the
Okay,
In the Wake
so
of the Sea Monsters.
exactly.
Yeah,
On
or
the
Sea
Search of
Serpents.
Unknown Animals. You
Yeah.
know, my first encounter with, I don't know, books about cryptids and cryptozoology. When I was a freshman in college, okay, I love libraries. I mean, we all do.
Oh yeah.
And to the listeners that are not quite sure what we're talking about, libraries are places where you could get books and read them, and they will lend them to you. But I kid. The point is that I found that book. And I must have checked it out several times in times where I should have been studying. I was reading that book. I didn't care then. I don't regret it now. Okay. Your book turned me, reminded me of the feelings that I had of the wonder that Heuvelmans' book inspired in me.
Oh,
Okay.
wonderful. That was
Yeah.
actually what I had hoped to achieve.
Well, you did it, at least in my case, and I'm sure in many others, because the things that as I read something like some things, of course, I knew of because of, well, I read about it, but some things I had no idea, and I was like giddy with learning things that I didn't know about.
That's
Okay,
always
so
so exciting.
you know, it is, and I got so enthusiastic about it, and in some cases I tried to find further information. I love the way you interspersed the let's see how I express myself in that. Just like your podcast, you made a very good mix of real bona fide animals, right? Completely fictitious as far as we know, animals and everything in between. And you intercalated them in each chapter. And I love that because it's a little surprise on each page.
Oh, thank you.
So that's I don't know. So in those lines, how would you define cryptozoology?
Oh, it's always said to be the study of unknown animals or mystery animals. But I worry about that term because people think it's a valid scientific field, which it can be, but you can't, as far as I know, go to university and study cryptozoology. You'll be studying zoology and biology and things like that. And as part of that field, you're going to be doing cryptozoology. No matter what you're doing, because science is all about finding out and learning and correcting mistakes, as far as we know there are mistakes. And just you may be out in the field finding literal animals that we never knew
Absolutely.
existed. So that's cryptozoology. But by calling it cryptozoology, you're only focusing on the mystery part, which you can't just have a mystery. You have to have a background in the science too, so that you know what's actually a mystery and what's not. That's something that drives me completely up the wall, because I read a lot of cryptozoology stuff, by people who, they're very interested in it, just like I am, but they don't always have a background and they don't really understand necessarily the science of certain animals and things like that and how biodiversity works and things like that. But sometimes it's obvious to me as a reader who is very familiar on a shallow level with a whole lot of animals by now after almost 300 episodes of this. Sometimes it's clear they're talking about a known animal. They just weren't familiar with it. There's one in particular, I'm not going to call any names out, but it's a sea serpent type monster that a particular person has spotted repeatedly in, I think it's the Ohio River, and even saw it for a long time from the descriptions given by this person, it's very clear to me that they were just seeing now I can't think of the word, probably an anhinga, which is a type of bird that just the way they sit in the water and the way they look. It's a bird. It's a known bird, but it does have some weird things that it does. Like it will absolutely sink. Grebes will do this too. They'll just sink in the water like little submarines and vanish.
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, if you don't know, and they swim underwater. They're chasing little animals. Mm-hmm. And so they can pop up like 30, 50, 90 feet away from where they were. And it looks like some water creature, which they sort of are, but they just happen to be birds. But it, you know, this particular animal was clearly a diving bird of some kind. And the person who saw it, it wasn't familiar with the bird. It's not common in that area, but it has been seen. So I've sort of gotten a little bit off topic and I've forgotten exactly what we were talking about.
No, we were defining cryptozoology. You are on topic. Yeah, you are on topic. I had to look it up too. So,
it may not be an anhinga. It may be a different kind of diving bird because there are several. But I think that's what that was.
So sometimes I think that in a romantic notion, as it were, that maybe in the future, just in the same way that alchemy became chemistry. Mm-hmm. Cryptozoology can, at least parts of it, can come to the under the umbrella of established science.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a lot of scientists who are doing cryptozoological work and publishing in cryptozoological journals. That's hard to say. Yeah. Darren Naish does a lot of that and does deep dives and really interesting stuff. I love his work. Carl Schuker does that. Mm-hmm. In fact, Carl Schuker's books and later his blog, which he still updates, is what got me into cryptozoology again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I loved it as a kid. I used to read, I think, probably the first cryptozoological writing that I ever read was actually Willie Ley.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
He used to write about, I mean, his books were already old when I was reading them as a kid, but he wrote a lot about robots and science, but he had several books about, you know, the history of zoology and things like that, and he talked a lot about undiscovered animals and things we would call cryptids now, but in a very scientific way. He was such a good writer. And I still have, I have collections of all his books now or all his animal books. And I just love revisiting them. He was such a good writer, but, I had read those and I'd read some more speculative stuff as a kid, but then I'd sort of gotten out of it because, you know, doing other stuff and then
life.
Yeah, life. And, you know, occasionally I'd read something about it, but I didn't really follow it and didn't really seek it out. But then one day I was in the bookstore and I found a book by Carl Schuker. And I'm pretty sure it was The Search for the Last Undiscovered Animals. Mm-hmm. And of course, the title caught my eye and I thought, oh, this looks fun. And it was like on clearance. I think it was published in like 2003, and this would have been like 10 years after that. So it was probably in print for a long time, but I managed to get a remainder copy. And I read it, and I thought, this is the best book I've ever read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I went out, and I had to order all his other books. And so, you know, just any authors out there whose books hit the remainder table, that's good because you can get a new reader for your other books if they find your book on the remainder table. So okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yes. But anyway, I do think that cryptozoology, I think if it's done right, with people who are really objective and know their background of the animals and everything, there's everything valid about it. That doesn't mean that it's like, oh, poo-poo, this can't exist, because obviously a lot of them do exist. We just don't know what they are yet.
Yeah, I agree. There's a difference between being a skeptic, a scientific skeptic, and a debunker.
Yeah.
So, and that's Very true. And that's very true. And let me tell you, I think you're a little psychic too. Because you anticipated my next question. What got you into cryptozoology? So, and you already talk about it. So you see, strange things do happen in nature. So no, but this is fun. I knew I was going to have a lot of fun in this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you a couple of things. Regardless of plausibility, okay? Let's throw science off the window right now.
Oh, no, there it goes.
Yeah, woo! There it goes, yeah. What would be your very favorite cryptid or mystery animal?
Have you heard of Jeff the Talking Mongoose?
No.
You got
my attention.
I'm not even sure it's in the book. I've only briefly talked about it in the podcast. One day, you know what? That might be a good topic for Monster Month this month.
Okay,
this
so year. You're talking a mongoose like Rikki Tikki Tavi mongoose?
Yeah, but it's a really complicated story. But basically, I should have looked up the information before. I actually almost said several other cryptids, but then I thought, no, I love Jeff. So I haven't looked up the details about Jeff.
You can give me your top three.
Well, I got to talk about Jeff because he's so weird. Back in, I think it was the 30s. It might have been the 20s, the 1930s, though, I think. Possibly the Isle of Man, some remote area of the UK.
Okay.
In this old farmhouse that was sort of, remote. The family lived there. It was the parents and their daughter, who was, I think, in her early teens at the time. And they lived on like a sheep farm. And they started to report that an animal of some kind was living in the walls of their house. And that wasn't surprising because the walls, the way this house was constructed, it had an outer wall and an inner wall. And in between, there was a lot of space. So little critters could come in. But this one was talking to them. It had a little voice. It had, it had a weird way of talking. It had, could speak some other languages, and it knew things that it shouldn't, and it reported gossip from the town that said it went and spied on other people, and it wouldn't let itself be seen, but then sometimes they'd catch a glimpse of this animal, and it called itself a ferret, or not a ferret, a mongoose.
Okay.
In a place where there shouldn't be mongooses, although actually there were some sort of mongooses in the area. But obviously this was something not an ordinary mongoose. So when I was about 12 and first read about this, I was convinced this was real. Because the way it was set out, it just seemed so plausible. Well, not really. I'm pretty sure. I mean, we're not really sure what happened. It seems pretty sure it was a hoax because obviously mongooses can't talk or, things like that. So I actually have a book that's like 3 inches thick just on this topic. And I have had it sitting on my nightstand to start for about a year and a half. And it's just so thick and so detailed. I just can't bring myself to start because then I think, okay, you start it, you have to start taking notes and you have to get the little sticky notes out and tag the pages and go back and, research. So maybe this is the time to do it. So I want Jeff the Talking Mongoose to be real.
Okay. So trust me, the least thing in my mind when I wrote that question for you is that I would be hearing about a talking mongoose.
Yeah, it's so random and so amazing. But yeah, the other things I thought about immediately were I want sea serpents to be real. They might be, we don't know. The closest thing we have is probably the giant oarfish, which is pretty awesome, but I want there to be an actual sea serpent sticking its head out of the water and looking at me, and then looping away through the water and
away from you, hopefully.
I don't want it to eat me or anything, but I want it to be like 50 feet long and really big and obviously creepily intelligent, and pretty sure that's not actually the case. I mean, there's lots of things in the ocean that are probably huge and weird and completely unknown, but I don't think it's going to be sticking its head out of the water and looking at me like
Absolutely. No, no,
that.
I agree with you. Sometimes in my wildest dreams, when I'm teaching, for example, about extinct animals in my biological sciences course, I would love to see a T-Rex, okay,
Oh
from a
yeah.
distance. Okay.
I want to see some of the sauropods that were so huge.
Yeah.
I just want to see what they look like and what their patterning was like and how
The
they
color,
actually,
exactly.
yeah,
Thank you.
because you know, if you think about the animals we have that we know about, like giraffes and zebras, they have amazing coloration. And, you know, a lot of reptiles do too, and certainly birds. So dinosaurs were probably pretty colorful, but we
I
don't
agree.
know what they really looked like.
I agree.
Oh, I want to see them so bad.
I know. And actually, in your book, you narrate a couple of stories about a mini T-Rex.
Oh yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, those are reports usually from the southwestern United States. That's where they most of them seem to come from, that area. About little like theropod-like reptiles walking on their hind legs or running with a long tail stuck up behind, and you know, the little toothy head and the little front legs. Sometimes the front legs aren't seen at all, but sometimes they're just little. And you know, people say this was obviously a reptile, it was a tiny dinosaur. And that would be so awesome if they really were, but you know what? I don't think they are. Although, if you want to get really technical, in a way they are, because I'm pretty sure what most people are seeing are actually wild turkeys. Yeah,
I've read,
not always, but yeah, I think probably a lot of the sightings that people say, well, that's a miniature T-Rex, they're probably actually seeing wild turkeys. And I go into detail about that in the book, but
Because
yeah.
that's maybe can be attributed to the misconception that many people have that all animals in a population are clones of each other. Okay.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
just like, for example, if you go into a classroom, you're going to see all different types of people. All right.
Yeah.
Some of them taller, some of them shorter, some of them skinnier than others. All right. So,
Some of them
yeah.
have more hair than others.
There, yeah, you had to mention hair, right? So, but yeah, I mean, it's fascinating at so many levels because if we can talk about it in terms of science, psychology, even perception, if you will. But yeah, I agree with you. There's so many animals that I would love to see firsthand.
Oh,
That,
yeah.
well, it's not going to happen most likely, but yeah, a person can dream, I
Yeah.
guess.
Well, I want to see a narwhal in the wild.
Oh, that would be
Yeah, I've
awesome.
loved narwhals since I was a kid. Just the whole concept of them and to find out that they were real. I actually know people who thought they were not real, like unicorns, but they're real and they are alive now. And one day maybe I'll be able to see one.
Did you hear that apparently somebody discovered a hybrid from a narwhal and a beluga?
Yeah, I've heard about that, and apparently it's not that
Oh,
uncommon
okay.
because, oh, well, I don't know how uncommon they are.
Okay.
I've read about it before, but I don't know how often it happens, but they're pretty closely related, I think.
Okay.
They're such interesting whales, both of them. They
Yeah.
have necks. They can turn their heads around. Other whales have fused neck vertebrae. They can't do that. But the narwhal and the beluga can. Plus, you know,
No,
the
yeah. I mean,
tusk. Yeah.
hybrids are fascinate me
Yeah,
because
yeah.
when you talk about ligons, for example, ligers,
Oh,
sorry.
yeah.
I mean, those they're huge, and they are,
Yeah.
you know, and well, but once again, I digress.
Well,
Let's go back to your.
I was about to start talking about ligers.
Well, great minds and all
Yeah.
that, right? So, in your opinion, what would be the cryptid with the most likelihood of being real?
I really think, and it may be extinct now, but I think the Buru from India is probably a real thing. And a lot of cryptozoologists think that it's some kind of monitor lizard, but I agree with Carl Schuker, who thinks it's a type of lungfish. That's very different from the ones we know from that part of the world, which it seems very plausible. It was seen and documented in a remote valley, and I think it's northern India, near the mountains or in the mountains or near the mountains. I guess the information was gathered in like the 40s or maybe the 50s from the people who lived there, and I can't remember the name of the tribal people. But it sounds so plausible, and they have such good oral history that has been checked out in other places and found to be completely accurate. From where they immigrated to this valley, they talked about their way, places that they went to and passed through, and other people have followed their directions and said, oh yeah, this is exactly where they came. Okay. So they talk about this one animal that there weren't that many of them. They had to drain the lake, the swampy area. They drained it to cultivate rice and other crops, and that drove these big animals. Basically, they all died. Which is a shame. Yeah. It sounds like they were pretty rare to start with. And there's a book that I've actually read that I got a lot of this information from. It's called, I can't remember what it's called.
Okay.
I can picture it on my shelf in the other room.
I know.
It's actually very interesting because that book was written in the 50s. It was an amusing travel account of from a newspaper reporter who went with this other guy and a photographer, and they went to another valley nearby. The Buru was supposedly still living there. They didn't see it, but they got more information. It was interesting. And I do think it was probably a real animal. It would be great if it was still alive in another remote valley, because, you know, this part of India and that whole area, I mean, it's just full of valleys, and a lot of them are really, really hard to get to even now. And there's a lot of cryptids that are reported from out there, like the pink-headed duck, which has supposedly gone extinct. I don't know if it's from this particular area, but it's very close. People still report seeing them, and there have been a few expeditions to go look for them, mostly birders who are like, I'm a birder too. I'm like, I would go to the ends of the earth to see a bird that was supposedly extinct. So far we haven't found it, but maybe. So
yeah, that's the dream, I guess. Speaking of rediscovered animals, you're again psychic, because that was kind of my next point. Because I would like to talk a bit about this so-called Lazarus species.
Yeah, I find them so interesting.
So in that sense, and you and I have privately talked about that in the past, what do you think about the possibility of the thylacine being still around?
I want it to be around so much. It's such an amazing animal. It's stripy and it's cool and it's different from anything else that's living in the area right now. I don't know that it's really there.
I mean, personally, I would love for it to be there, but I don't want them ever to capture them. Because they're going to capture them, put them in a cage or whatever. And what if there's only one pair in the wild? I'd like to think, don't get me wrong, I would love to see them. But I'd rather have them living, really living, than, and to leave myself with the dream. I don't know that. with the idea that they're around.
Well, the only thing we can do to make sure that if they are still there, that they're okay, is to make a whole lot of protected land.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that anything, and honestly, I think that goes for just about any cryptids. Like, if they are out here, then we need to stop polluting the places where they might be living. We need to stop clearing the land and building Kmarts, or, well, Walmarts now, not Kmart. Yeah. But, you know, habitat loss affects so many animals, and it affects us too. We just don't necessarily see how it's affecting us until it's too late.
Yeah, and there are, you know, that would be kind of my preference in terms of a lesser species, the thylacine. But there are others that fascinate me, but I deeply don't want them to be around anymore. I'm thinking I'm thinking about Megalania. You know that they are like super Komodo dragons, like 20, and people have said that that has been, disproven. Because apparently there was like a herpetologist who actually saw one once, but that was proven not to be the case. That was a hoax. But let me tell you, you know, I'm Puerto Rican, and in Puerto Rico, there's anoles, the tiny lizards. They are all around the island, and I'm terrified of them.
Oh, no.
It's like a phobia that I have. Okay.
Oh, but they're so cute.
They look cute from a distance. So you can imagine how would I feel about a Megalani.
Well, you know what? In a case like that, I think I would not want to get too close to it either.
Yeah, I agree.
I kind of don't want to get too close to a Komodo dragon either, for that matter.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Oh, man. So this has been awesome. So would you like to tell us about your website, about your social media links, any possible future projects?
Well, let's see. You can always find the book just by doing a Google search for Beyond Bigfoot and Nessie, Lesser Known Mystery Animals from Around the World.
Yep.
It's available to order pretty much anywhere. If you're in the United States and you own a bookshop, the books are returnable, so you can order them without fear.
Okay.
In case they don't sell, you can send them right back. But I hope you don't need to. But yeah, you can order them. They should be available throughout the world, ebook and the paperback. And if you see me in person at a convention, I will probably have one or two on me, and I can sign it for you and pass it over for a little bit of money. Or if you have like enamel pins, I will trade because I'm obsessed with them. Right.
Okay, that's good to know.
But, the podcast is Strange Animals Podcast. That should be available just about anywhere you get your podcasts. Okay. And the I'm on Twitter at Strange Beasties, because Strange Animals was taken. So Strange Beasties. And I'm on a couple other things, but mostly I'm on Twitter. And I can't remember my handles on other places.
I'll find out and I'll put it on the show notes. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't look me up on Instagram. I never post. I'm just on there to see what my favorite bands are doing, things like that. what else? I don't know if I'm going to... If I do a sequel to the book, it's going to be another 5 years.
Okay.
Which is going to pass in a flash, though, I got to say, because the last 5 years sure did. I do want to revise this book now that I know more about how to do it. There's some pretty egregious typos that I feel bad about. There's some mistakes that I found. Yeah.
Trust me. You're going to find typos 20 years down the line. I know.
Well, but these are ones that I should have caught. I mean, just really simple stuff. But I also, I ran out of time to do a better index, and I really needed to do chapter citations, and I just didn't have time to, because a lot of the older episodes of the podcast, I did not really take good notes and keep them about where I what sources I used. So I tried to backtrack a lot, and I couldn't always find them. So I just did a selected sources in the back of the book. But I'd love to make it easier for people to follow what I found. And if they are interested, they can dig a little more.
Okay.
But yeah, so I write fiction too, but it's, you know, not always.
Would you mind tell us about that?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have, what else do I have out right now? I have a new story out. It's a novella. It's about dragons. But it
is
not
so cool.
Well, it's not appropriate for kids, so I hesitate to talk about it. So,
but it's still cool.
Yeah, well, it is still cool. If anybody's interested, it's called Royal Red. And it's got a pink dragon on the cover flying up on a sky background, and it's really pretty, and it looks like a kid's book, and I had to put a disclaimer at the beginning saying, these dragons are adults. They have adult things going on in their lives
that kids
don't need to be reading about. But it just came out. I just published it last month. It's a self-published story, but
all right.
But I do have other things that are published by actual publishers. They're not necessarily animal related, so sort of off the
But you know what? Yeah. That makes you a well-rounded person with a lot of talent, let me tell you.
Well, thank you.
I for one, am honored to be your friend and colleague.
Thank you.
And I thank you for joining us today and sharing us with your projects and your passions. We wish you all the best in your future episodes in the podcast. I'm looking forward to the second edition of the book.
Gonna have to wait a little while.
Well, it's okay. I can wait. And I hope lots of luck in your conventions and everything.
Oh, thank you.
And, well, thank you ever so much, Kate.
Oh, thank you for having me. I had a great time.
Absolutely. Well, talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay, everyone. Thanks again for listening. I can tell you in advance that I have a few episodes and interviews lined up for your listening pleasure. Thank you for sticking with me. Thank you for your patience. And, well, talk to you soon and stay out of trouble. I don't know why I keep telling you that, because as you know, I never do. You really missed me. Bye-bye.